Welcome to It's a Good Life podcast, where it's all about helping entrepreneurs think, feel, and do better. Here's your host, Brian Buffini.
Well, the top of the morning to you, and welcome to today's program. Today's title is called Ownership is Everything. Now, there was a big negotiation amongst me and the team on what we should call this episode. My title was, What's Your Excuse? And the reason being is today we're going to talk about excuses. However, my very sensitive staff said that sounded too harsh, Brian, so we needed to come up with something that's better. And it's actually a little more outcome-based, so I capitulated and I agreed. Ownership is everything. And where I first came up with that idea was when I interviewed Jocko Willink. And if you remember, Jocko is the Navy SEAL officer who was actually season one, episode 166, if you haven't heard it. Fascinating guy with some great insights. He's written some great books. And one of his books, in fact, his biggest best-selling book is called Extreme Ownership. His dynamic is, you know, old school people used to say, you know, take responsibility. You take responsibility for your life and so on and so forth. But I think the more modern approach is to take ownership of things. Now, Jocko also communicates from that Navy SEAL perspective. It's kind of high and inside, as a baseball would say. It's kind of hardcore stuff. And in that interview, he said that excuses are the lies we tell ourselves. And it's true. It's just, that's a tough way to hear it. And it's also, when you're dealing with things or struggling with things and things are hard, it's very easy to check out altogether. The phrase I like to use is the stories we tell ourselves. And the better a storyteller we are, the more we believe our own BS. And I know a lot about that. In fact, I'm going to, at the end of this broadcast, bring you back in time to a live event where I told a story about golfing with Lou Holtz at the Masters with my dad and my brother Dermot. It's basically how I got my own excuses exposed. We had had a fire, I hadn't played golf in a long time, and we get invited to the Masters. I go to Augusta with my dad and my brother and Lou Holtz, the chance of a lifetime. And rather than focus on the experience and be present and enjoy and optimize the opportunity, I was clinging on to some excuses to try to protect myself. And so when we finish up here today, it'll be good because I believe leaders go first. And so I'm going first. I'm going to expose myself to all of you with a funny story about my own excuses, how I told my own excuses, turned them into stories. And at the end of the day, it turns out they were lies because with a bit of coaching and a bit of help, the story got exposed and the performance changed. And so today I'm going to talk about excuses because we live in a world where accountability is optional, where anything that's difficult can ultimately be rationalized and packaged. And so I'm going to talk about the types of excuses that there are. I'm going to talk about how excuses have purpose and there's a reason for them. And then we'll finish up on the how-to side of things, which is, you know, we want you to think, feel, and do better on this program. So we're going to talk about the thinking part, and that's the types of excuses. The purpose is really the feeling part. And the ownership is, what can you do? What can you do so you can improve your business and life and live the good life? So let's dive right into the types of excuses. The first type is called, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. And I'm experiencing one of these things right now. I'll say I'm doing business with this person. She came highly recommended. She's highly paid. And anytime there's a challenge, we're doing a fairly good sized project, but anytime there's a problem, she blames somebody else. It's not my fault. And what has happened is somebody who she probably doesn't realize just how many referrals I can send her. You know, we had Ben Stewart on here with one of our financial podcasts. Ben Stewart has received hundreds of referrals from me over the past 20 years. If he looks at his book of business as a guy that manages $300 million in assets, probably 70% of those people have come from my referrals. I'm a referral machine because when I believe in something, I advocate for it. This person has lost my advocacy and she's very good at what she does because every time we get into any kind of difficulty, it's not my fault. Henry Cloud said, blame is a sort of comfort food for the soul. It diverts us from the effort of owning responsibility. And that's where we're going to end up. Like Beverly said to me one time, she goes, well, what do you want from this gal? Just saying, hey, I screwed up. Sorry. And that would be it. I'd be great. In fact, I would feel better about her. I'd feel good. Yeah, great. That's right. It was a screw up. We made a bit of a mistake. Let's not do that again and go on to the next one. That's it. And if you find in public life, by the way, when a public personality screws up, if they just come out and admit it, people are very forgiving. People will move on. But when we make excuses, it's not my fault. And the worst type of that is when we say it to ourselves, it's not my fault. Now what happens is it removes the opportunity to take ownership. The next type of excuse is the smokescreen. Now, a smokescreen is a screen of smoke to hinder enemy observation of a military force. Another dynamic is it's something designed to obscure, confuse, or mislead. Now, I'm saying this to you. Most of us make excuses to ourselves the most. Most of our excuses we say to ourselves. But we say them so often, then we say them to other people. Jim Rohn used to say, if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If you don't, you'll find an excuse. Why am I not successful? Why am I out of shape? I'm big bones. Everyone in my family is overweight. Genetics. Yeah, food just doesn't. My body retains ice cream. We can find any excuse we want. And it gets to it. Like, you know, I lost 25 pounds here recently and somebody said, what'd you do? And I said, well, I stopped eating bad stuff and increased my workouts. I hate that answer because I would always ask people when they lost weight and I was feeling heavy, you know, what are you doing? And they'd say, well, I'm eating better and working out. Well, what? No, give me the other thing. Give me the other thing. I mean, now there can be nuances and things like that. But at the end of the day, I stopped eating the bad stuff and started eating more good stuff. And I started increasing my workouts instead of, no, I think I'm okay. Or I'm tired, I need to rest. So we put up smoke screens or we have, it's not my fault. And then the last one is the type of excuse. It's called the explanation. And these are ultimately the stories we tell ourselves, which I covered in episode 299 of season one, an actual podcast called The Stories We Tell Ourselves. Jim Rohn said, excuses are the nails used to build a house of failure. Samuel Beckett, long before that, said, on his condition of mankind, there's man all over for you, blaming on his boots the fault of his feet. There are types of excuses. You'll hear me today share a story where I go first and I share with you my excuses. I've had a bunch. I'm a great storyteller. I tell myself great stories. But at the end of the day, all you get is the story. All you get to keep is the excuse. You don't get the experience. You don't get the results. You get to say, yeah, I'm 45 pounds overweight and here's the excuse why. But guess what? You get to stay 45 pounds overweight. Oh, here's why my finances are a mess. The Democrats did this and the Republicans did that. The Fed did this and the market did that. That's why I spend more than I make. And these are the things we do. And we have reasons for that. The bottom line is that when we take ownership and truly embrace where we are and why we are, then we get to go to work and we get to abandon the excuse. And we don't need the, it's not my fault. That's just our own insecurities. The smokescreen, that's, I don't want to hear the truth. And the explanation, now it's the rotisserized story. And most people and most of all of us live in the story. And let me say this, the story I want to live in is that I was pursuing the good life with all I had. That's the story I want to live in. And that the chips fall where they may. Do the best I can with myself, my faith, my family, my finances, my business, my customers, my health, everything. The chips fall where they may. This is what it is. And it is what it is. You know, we're all planted. I'm an Irish guy living in Southern California. It wasn't my choice. I had a motorcycle accident. That's where I ended up. I'm 5'9". I'm not 6'9". You know, that's just the way it is. This is who I am. This is where I am. This is where I started. And so we have our circumstances and we have our excuses. I think over time we want to wean ourselves off the excuses one by one and get into our performance. That performance becomes more and more the good life. Here's the second thing is that excuses have a purpose to them. First of all, they save face with others. It's a great purpose. This is how you get to save face or embarrassment. It helps preserve our dignity to some degree, right? In preserving dignity, we have to be more aware of our influence. We have to honor other people's dignity in that process and then consider unique perspectives and motivations. We are big in a saving face. And you know, it's wild. I've done business all over the world and in certain cultures, in certain parts of negotiation, the price and the terms are not nearly as important as saving face. And so there's other cultures where that's not needed at all. And it's just all, you know, bare knuckle negotiations. Saving face with others. What will the neighbors think? What do other people think of me? Sometimes we can be overconsumed with what other people think of us. We're people pleasers, those kinds of things. So the purpose of the excuse is to save face. Here's the next and to me more deadly application of an excuse is it lowers expectations for ourselves. John Wooden, the Hall of Fame basketball coach, the winningest coach of all time in college basketball when it comes to championships, said, never make excuses. Your friends don't need them, and your foes won't believe them. I mean, that is gold. Never make excuses. Your friends don't need them, and your foes won't believe them. Why do we have these excuses? It's for us. We're trying to not only save face, but it lowers our expectations. Les Brown says, no one rises to low expectations. We have these excuses. We lower our expectations. Therefore, it's no problem if we fail. We have it built in. Most people have the excuse before they try anything new, before they try anything at all, before they risk anything, before they go for anything, before they try to be the very best at anything. They have the excuse built out. Justifies low performance. So one of the things I did in kind of getting my health turned around is I committed to really upping my workouts, intensifying the eating. And I started doing this because I have a gym at home, which I used many years before COVID, but built it out during COVID, have the trainer come to the house and so on and so forth. But I found myself when I traveled and I was actually in a public gym or a place where there's a bunch of people taking the class, I'd be all in on that. So I started making an intentional, you know, once a week to go to a place right here in San Diego where they have classes. And I'm doing things I've never done. Spin classes. Yeah, I have a Peloton, but I'm doing spin classes. And it's a different dynamic. Yoga. You know, I always used to do downward facing donuts, but now I'm actually doing the yoga. And, you know, here I am and a bunch of people who have been doing yoga for years. And here I am, the top of the class. And then I did a couple of classes with a trainer that were like people doing, you know, weights and an aerobic type weightlifting type deal. And one of the things that hit me was in this one class was how many people were making excuses. And it was like, well, I can't really do this. And oh, I have a bad shoulder and I have this and I have that. And the trainer was brilliant because he didn't want to injure anybody. And he was very, very careful. But he basically ignored everybody's excuse. He was empathic. He was patient. Okay, that hurts. Well, you need to try a lighter weight. Okay. Why don't you try this? Try pulling it instead of pushing. Okay. He's very patient, very empathic. But in each case, the person who was complaining, who had an excuse, and they started out with, I can't do this. It was kind of like doctor's orders. I can't do this because my physiotherapist says I'll rip my rotator cuff or whatever. All of those excuses went out the window. I signed up for this week of classes and I did this every day. And I'll be honest, I was there and I was like, I should have stayed home. I have my own gym. I don't have to listen to a bunch of whiners, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was very, very illustrative to me because I realized I have this myself. There's a day I'm in, I'm working all day. I'm going to do the workouts in the evening. And typically I do all my workouts in the morning. Okay, I'll do it in the evening, but I get home, I'm wiped out, I'm tired. I eat a little something. Oh, I don't do well when I eat, work out after eating. And then, you know, I'm really tired. I need to rest. And that's how I do it. So I don't do the whiny one. I do the very sophisticated, logical convincing of myself of my own BS. But I watch these people in this class for a week basically make excuse after excuse after excuse. And at the end of the week, the trainer had gotten them all through the exercises. By the way, they were all using the original weight he'd recommended. The truth is they could do it. They were better for it. They felt better afterwards. They felt a sense of accomplishment at the end of the week. You could tell. Like, oh no, they're getting momentum. What did they have coming in was excuses. They got some professional help and they came out of it going, I'm capable. I'm actually able to do more. And now instead of the excuse, they were starting to embrace fitness. Instead of the excuse, they're starting to embrace confidence. Instead of the excuse, they're starting to look and feel better. They're getting the actual payoff. So excuses do have purpose. They save face, they lower expectations, and they justify low performance. And Bruce Nauman used to say, if you really want to do it, you do it. There are no excuses, right? All the same stuff, same as Jim Rohn, same as everything else. Lastly, I want to talk about ownership is everything. Ownership. It's a different dynamic than responsibility because responsibility often comes with a sense of, it can come with a sense of guilt. It can come with a sense of restriction, like I have to do this. Ownership means I choose to do this. I embrace this on purpose. For example, in really getting focused on my health here recently, I've been working out with a trainer who's really good. But it wasn't until I took ownership on my health instead of abdicating it to the trainer that I really make the progress. I've tried all kinds of different foods and food services and pushing Beverly and do this and do that or have my staff have foods for me, whatever else. And now it doesn't matter. I'm taking ownership myself. Everything I eat is now something I choose to eat or I've prepared to eat or I've planned to eat. I'm taking ownership of it as opposed to, I'm on a diet. right, which is something that's done to me and something I plan to get out of, by the way. It's like being in jail for a period of time. So taking ownership is a powerful thing. Again, Henry Cloud said, you can be free from whatever situation surrounds you to the degree that you're willing to take responsibility and ownership for it, even if it's not your fault. Powerful stuff. I got to see this a little bit here recently, and I'm going to keep this theme going on here, is because I want to talk about, you know, how do you own things? And for me, it's getting outside perspective. We need people who are truth tellers. We need truth moments and those kinds of things. You're going to hear a story today of my excuse with Lou Holtz. It starts off with Brian's refrain. I used to be a really good golfer, and then I had kids, and then I was busy, and then I'd play two times a year. And that was my little mantra and so on and so forth. I go out and I play golf, and I play terrible golf, and I tell the fellas I'm playing. I used to be a really good golfer, but now I don't. So I decided to do something about it. So, okay, I signed up for a series of lessons. What's that? A guy with a coaching company went and hired a coach. It was a shock to my system. And, you know, I'm a guy that believes in earning everything, and you get what you deserve, and you get what you put in, and you only get it, you know, that life is fair. You get out what you put in. But when it came to golf, I didn't want that at all. I didn't want the law of the harvest when it came to golf. I wanted to not practice, not work on it, not even be that focused on it, warm up very shortly and go out and play great golf. Now, that goes against everything I believe in every part of my life. But in the area of golf, which was my hobby, I was expecting. I wanted the results. It's like expecting to be fit without working out, to be trim without eating right, to be wealthy without having a budget, saving and investing, to have a burgeoning business without doing the lead gen and the marketing and the great customer service and managing the business and grow. Like all of this stuff, law of the harvest, you get out what you put in. I didn't want that. I expected, and I was frustrated with my golf game. No, by the way, imagine this, like, because we can do this with relationships with people. Well, you know, I just buy another set of golf clubs. People go, oh, I'm just going to get another job, right? We have 47 million people with the great resignation. 70% of them are going, I made a mistake. I have people who've done that with marriages. And it's always take the sour milk and put it in a new fridge. And now it's the new fridge's fault. Maybe it's the sour milk. And the sour milk comes wrapped with a bunch of excuses. So I went and got golf lessons. Well, it was a shock to my system on two fronts. My very first golf lesson, his name's Sebastian. He's down in Florida, the Doral Performance Center down there. And Sebastian kind of hooked me up on video. And I'm looking at, first of all, my swing. I'm looking at just basic fundamentals that I know not to do. I had no idea I was doing it because we can't see our own swing. We can't see our own life. We can't see ourselves. We are a very, very poor judge of ourselves. And without him saying a word, I was looking at my swing going, oh my goodness, that's what my swing looks like. The second thing that happened is he freeze framed my swing. I saw this guy on the screen with a giant gut. I said out loud, I go, oh my God, I have an ass in the front. And I'm like, it just shook me. And I'm like, really? I shave myself every day. I could dress myself every day. I'm looking at myself in the mirror all the time. I'm on camera and on stage. I had no idea I had gotten that heavy. I don't even know how that's possible, but every human being seems to miss that about themselves. And because people around you go, hey, Brian, you put on a lot of weight. No one's saying that. People who say that aren't your friends anymore. So when I got the outside perspective, not only did I work on my golf game, I worked on my health game. I worked on my gut game. And I'm still working on it and more dedicated and committed to it than ever before because I'm going to own it. I'm owning it now. Whitney Wolf Heard said, life is about perspective and how you look at something. Ultimately, you have to zoom out. Getting that outside perspective is key. Shonda Rhimes said, it's important to have people willing to say you're wrong or who have a totally different perspective than you do on everything. Fresh ideas are hard to come by and good ones are even harder. Einstein said, no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. Bottom line is, the same thinking that got you here is the same thinking that you have to change. So a couple things. Now I'm taking golf lessons, sure. Now I'm actually practicing, sure. And by the way, it's not coming quick. And after the lessons initially, and this happens sometimes with business coaching, I feel like I went backwards initially, and then I started going forward. And now bit by bit, I find myself going forward. And I still have moments where the old swing and the old stuff wants to come back. But when you own it emotionally, when you own it mentally, when you get an outside perspective, now you get to do the work. The second thing is discipline. And I did a podcast, episode 166, which is discipline equals freedom. Discipline in the changes we want to make. I'd rather have discipline than excuses. Nothing great's ever going to be accomplished without discipline. And the good life won't happen without discipline. You won't have great finances without discipline. You won't have great health without discipline. You won't have good relationships without discipline. Hold yourself responsible for a higher standard than anyone else expects of you. Never excuse yourself, said Henry Ward Beecher. It's powerful stuff. Got to have that discipline. And then lastly, look, change is hard. Change is hard. Get help. In fact, that's not what I say. When I'm in private conversations with people, I say change is bloody hard. I have a podcast that goes to hundreds of thousands of people every month. We try to reach them with good information. I have coaches that coach tens of thousands of people every month and have been doing it for a quarter of a century. Change is hard. Now, we have all these great success stories, and my business went from 35 grand to 300 grand, and that's the typical average result and all that kind of good stuff. Change is hard. We're like homing pigeons. We want to go back to what we know. Change is hard. It's our comfort zone. There's a reason we got ourselves to where we are in the first place. Change is hard. Get the help you need. Edward R. Murrow, the great journalist, said, difficulty is the excuse history never accepts. We never accept any type of excuse because at the end of the day, we don't like excuses from other people, but somehow it's acceptable for us to give them. We don't accept them from other people, but we do accept them from ourselves. The three types of excuse we covered today, it's not my fault, the smokescreen, the explanation, bit by bit, let's root them out of our lives. Next, excuses have purpose. They save face, they lower expectations, and they justify low performance. And at the end of the day, we got to take ownership. And that's why I capitulated to call this episode Ownership is Everything. Why? Because it is. You have to make the decision. You have to decide to have a successful business. You have to decide to have a successful marriage. You have to decide to have a successful family. You have to decide to be healthy. You have to decide to be rich. You have to decide to have a good attitude and be a person that attracts people to them instead of drives people away. We got to get that outside perspective. We got to have the discipline. Change is hard. Get the help. And with that said, I get to go first. And hopefully this will be a fun way to listen to my own excuses getting exposed. I'm going to take you back in time to a live seminar I did years ago. This is all in the context after the fire. I go and hang out with Lou Holtz, and I had a fun story to tell.
Now, I used to be a pretty good golfer. As the kids got busier and life got busier, I went from being a one handicap to like a whatever and playing twice a year. So Lou's after me all the time, and I finally said, okay, let's do it. Let me just put it on the calendar. I know this. Let's do it. Let's do it 2 weeks before the tournament. Good. I'll bring my dad out from Ireland. Yada, yada. It'll be great. Well, in the meantime, life goes on, and I'm still catching up post-fire. My golf clubs were in my Mercedes that burned to the ground. I don't have a set of golf clubs. Dermot says, hey, man, we got to go golfing. We got to go practice. We got to go this. I go, Dermot, I'm up to my eyeball. So here it is. It's now 2 days before we go. I have not hit a golf ball in 2 years. I do not own a set of golf clubs. Dermot calls me, what are you going to do? Whatever else. Okay. Literally, this is true as I'm standing here. I go to Walmart at 11 o'clock at night and buy a set of golf clubs. For those of you who don't know golf, that might not be the premier place to get them. And Dermot's like, what are you going to do? We're about to play the hardest golf course in the world. And you haven't hit a golf ball in 2 years. And you haven't practiced. You haven't even... I said, here's my plan. I'm going to cram. I used to do this in college. So we get to the golf course. I said, I'm going to get up the following morning. I'm going to beat the balls for about 2 hours. I'm going to find a little something to work with, and I'll ride that all day. So we're there. Bring my dad. Now, you got to understand, we're sitting in Augusta. We're in the restaurant. Look, I'm a real estate training guy. I'm here. Here's the president of ExxonMobil. Here's the head of American Express. And all these different characters, the owners of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And here's my dad. And my dad looks at me and goes, bet I'm the first house painter that you ever had inside here. So we're spending the night in the cabin with Lou. Lou's smoking the pipe. He comes in, and Lou is wrapped tight, and he's ready to go. And he flies open the door. He says, all right, man, breakfast at 7, teeing off at 7:30. I go, what time's the driving range open, Lou? 7:30. So I'm like, oh, now I'm really sweating it. So now I realize I'm really going to hack. So I start working on my stories. So... this is true as I'm standing here. We're on the first tee at Augusta. You get your own caddy. He's got the white overalls on, the green cap on, and they have your name on the back. This happened. I'm on the first tee. The caddy pulls off the head cover. There is plastic on the head cover. He takes out a tee, and he looks at me. He takes out a tee, snaps it, takes off the plastic, takes the price tag, and he hands me the club. And I know what he's thinking. He's like, I'm wearing this schmuck's name on my back. Charlie freaking Walmart. I got 36 holes of this. So I get up, I put the ball down, I take a couple practice swings, and I stand up and I just hit this laser. 280 yards, straight left. Into the middle of the freaking trees. Oh my God, we started on the 10th hole. And 10th hole's tree line, wherever. I'm in the woods. I'm like, okay, give me a 2-iron. He takes out the 2-iron, takes the label off. And there's a gap in the trees about 6 feet wide. And I'm like, I can do this, even though I haven't practiced and prepared. And I'm going to hit a 2-iron, and I'm going to hook it about 60 yards around the trees. And I wham it, only it doesn't hook. And I said something that rhymed with that. And the ball goes boom, all the way across the fairway, way over into this clump of trees. And the caddy is walking ahead. He's chewing tobacco like this. And he's walking like this. He finds the ball. He's standing there. I come on over. He goes, Miss Buffini, I'm caddying here 25 years. I ain't never even seen this part of the golf course. So now I'm embarrassed. So I hack out, jack up. I get on the green for 6. I make like a 30-foot putt for a 7 at a par 4. Well, between that and the next tee, I'm making all these jokes. Oh, my God, I haven't done this. He's peeling the things off, and you got to see this, Lou, and this and that and the other. Oh, my God, I haven't hit a ball in 2 years. Oh, my God, I used to be great when the kids were small, and I'm doing all this, and I'm embarrassed. But I'm doing it, and I'm telling the stories, and I'm good at telling stories. So we're getting onto the tee, Lou's just walking the whole time, and he spins on me, and his pipe comes this far from my nose. He takes out the pipe, and he looks at me in the eye. He goes, did you come here to play golf or to make excuses? Now I'm Irish. I'm pissed. My brother Dermot's there, and he's known what I've gone through. He's double pissed, and he comes to me, I don't care. You hold him, I'll hit him, I tell you right now. We've been thrown out of better places than this. Let's go. But now here's what happened. He got in my face, and now I gave him my best excuses, and now I'm stripped naked. I don't feel like I have any game. I got no confidence whatsoever, and he just took away my excuses. And now I'm standing there on the 11th tee of what's called Amen Corner, 11, 12, 13. It's Amen Corner because you're supposed to say your prayers going around it. And I stand up and I manage to kind of fish hook this ball down the fairway. And I take out a wood and I kind of schlabadon it down onto the green. And I manage to get up and down and I make a par because I'm grinding my lights out because I'm embarrassed. I get up on the 12th, it's the hardest hole in golf, and I manage to get it near the green and chip it up and make a putt. I get to the 13th, I put it on the fairway, I put it on the green, I'll make a birdie. Now I'm 1 under par around Amen Corner. I birdie 15, I birdie 17. Lou Holtz doesn't say a freaking word to me. We go in for a little snack because we just played the back 9. And he's sitting down next to me. And he hadn't said a word in 8 holes. And he looks at me and he smiles. And he goes, isn't it nice to come to a place like this and play well? I shot in the 70s that day, and I remember it. But what I really remember is being coached. And what I really remember is being stripped away of my excuses. And when he stripped away my excuses, I came to the place, I just got to do my best, whatever the hell that is. And I'm going to get away from the stories, I'm going to get away from the excuses, I'm exposed, I got nowhere to go. And I played 36 holes that day, and then we went and played the par 3. And for me and my dad and my brother, it was one of the most memorable days ever. And Lou Holtz has told me repeatedly, and his best friends have told me repeatedly, that was his favorite day he ever had at Augusta. Because, by the way, it's very rewarding to coach somebody up. He brought me out there because he wanted to impact my spirits. He knew I'd been through a hell and back. And my excuses were stopping that from happening. So he stripped away my excuses. He loved me enough to do the hard thing and made me better than what I was setting myself up to be. So I don't have now, years from now, a story of that I'm really embarrassed about how I hacked around. I went to Augusta, but it kind of sucked. I have in my heart a memory I have of myself, my dad, and him for the rest of my life. You see, a coach can pull more out of you than you can pull out of yourself.
Fun stuff. Like I said, I enjoy telling a bit of a story myself. And there you got to hear me telling stories to myself that got rooted out. And like I talked about getting an outside perspective, Lou Holtz, one of the greatest coaches of all time, coached me up that day. And I learned a life lesson that has stuck with me forever. As I challenge all of you guys today, understand, I know how difficult this stuff is. But ultimately, I also know how great the rewards are when you put the excuses aside, you take ownership. Boy, the good life is waiting. And with that said, I hope you enjoyed today. I hope it was beneficial to you. I hope you take more ownership of your business and life. We're going to leave it off today with someone who takes a lot of ownership and who rarely have I ever, in her 91 years, given an excuse for anything. And that's my mother, Therese, who's going to give us all an Irish blessing on our way out the door.
May the road rise up to meet you, and may the wind always be at your back. May the rain fall soft upon your fields, and the sun shine warm upon your face. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. See you next time.